Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
Making the show happen every night. And that's just a small part of what we have for you on this Dave's Gone By. We also have a huge News Gone By segment, current events from a satirical and goofy perspective. Also today, October 20th, would have been the 149th birthday of poet Arthur Rimbaud. Probably more influential for what he tried to do stylistically than most of the poetry he actually wrote, still, it's an occasion worth marking, so we're going to read a little of Rimbaud's poetry and listen to some of the rock music artists he so strongly influenced. So get ready for some Van Morrison, some Patti Smith, some Doors, theater, poetry, music, current events, comedy. Could it be any other show but Dave's Gone By? I think not. And I think you're in for a treat if you keep your dial at AM 1240 WGBB and keep your browser at AM1240WGBB.com. And keep in mind that this program is rated DGB-13, our equivalent of PG-13. Lord knows we're not Disney G, but we stay on the safe side of FCC 21. So if you have kids, be warned, the show can get messy and Clohessy. And we throw out the first pitch just 60 seconds from... now! Start with mulligatawny soup, then try an appetizer of tandoori quail, have a tasty garlic naan, and a main course of lamb kebab, prawn masala, or buttered chicken, topped off by a glass of mango lassi. Hungry? Then visit the Tandoor Grill. Fine cuisine, great service, nice people. 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center, 516-766-4440. See the menu at tandoorgrill.com. It's India-licious. What's the one thing everybody wants? Of course, it's love. And if it's love you're after, Friday nights at 6, we have the show for you. Long Island's Dating. An hour of live chat, interviews, music, everything about having happier relationships, whether you're single or coupled or wish you were both. Long Island's Dating, hosted with love by Bonnie D. Graham, 6 to 7 every Friday night. And listen at 6:30 for the sultry WGBB Weather Girl. Yeah, I did her. Oh, is this still on? Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and Dave's got guests. Well, a guest, and pretty excited about this one. Went to see, about 2 weeks ago, an off-Broadway comedy-drama called Rounding Third by Richard Dresser, who's done a bunch of plays in regional theater and off-Broadway, very talented fellow. And this is one of my favorites of his. It's a cute, really, I mean, people would say commercial or slick or whatever, what have you, but it's a fun, enjoyable show about two different Little League coaches, one of whom is doing it for the first time, and he's not quite intellectual, but kind of nebbishy and kind of, you know, rah-rah and liberal and all for the kids, and the other one, perhaps a little more blue-collar and a little more Steinbrenner-ish in his techniques, and yet neither one is completely right and neither one is completely wrong. We'll tell you more about that, but what really struck me about the play, aside from it being very entertaining, was the performance by the gentleman I happen to have on the phone with me now, a fellow named Robert Clohessy, whom a name you probably do recognize, and if you saw the face, you certainly would, because he was a regular on Hill Street Blues, and he's been a regular on Oz, and he's shown up on television all over the place, and in movies. Well, if Rounding Third is a hit, and I kind of think it could be, I think it's going to be a next-level performance for Robert Clohessy. He really is fun to watch and very magnetic, and he takes this character places that you don't necessarily expect. Anyway, that's enough just build-up. Let's have Robert talk for himself. Robert, thank you so much for being on Dave's Gone By.
Hi there. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, actually, just before we were on the phone, you were saying that you spent yesterday evening mostly in misery Because?
Oh, because I'm a Mets fan.
Yeah, I should say.
And these last few years, we've been all miserable. Miserable Mets fans.
Oh,
highest paid salary and the worst team.
I know.
Made the worst trades. Nothing ever came through with anything.
Well, and you know, everybody thought that, you know, the previous year would be the rebuilding year, and then they'd start again. But now they're at zero, or they're minus three, and then next year will be the rebuilding year.
I don't know. You know, Steinbrenner, he's the kind of guy you love to hate, but you know what? He gets it done.
Well, he's got the
whoever he brings over. They work it. They make it work. They. You know, what are you
going to
do?
It's the Yankees. I know it's the curse of the Red Sox, too, but it is the Yankees. Anyway, we're talking baseball, which is really, really appropriate because you're in this new play called Rounding Third, which, as I mentioned, is about Little League coaches. Have you ever done anything like that in your
life? Well, yeah. I didn't play baseball myself, but I played basketball. Like, I grew up in New York. I grew up in the Bronx, and I played high school ball at St. Helena's High School. But I have two sons, 16 and 10, and I've kind of, I've actually was more of the other character in real life as far as baseball was concerned. I was really casual and, you know, I didn't play baseball, so I was just there for my kids and the whole thing, and I helped out whenever I could. On the other hand, with basketball, when I coached my son's basketball team,
mm-hmm.
I was more like the character I played in the show where I was definitely driving him to be winners, to become, you know, whatever, division champions, school champions, and the whole thing. And I actually did take my son's eighth grade class to an undefeated season.
All right.
The first one they never had. They never had an undefeated season at a school, and it was the first time this happened. And it wasn't totally my coaching. It was just that six or seven players came along at that eighth grade who happened to be, you know, ball players.
An interesting thing is the one thing that you would expect a play like this to be concerned with is the usual thing of, like, the crazy parents who are too into the game for their own reasons and are projecting
right.
themselves onto their kids, and you figure that's going to be a big element. And there's a little bit of, there's one scene in there that alludes to it, but,
right.
you know, this being a two-character show, there's no way to bring in all these parents.
Right.
But did you ever experience any of that in your coaching?
I actually did get kind of confronted several times because our team was so good that it was hard not to really give a good beat to everybody we played. It just so happened we just would win by 30, 40 points a game. And I would have everybody in there, and I wouldn't press them, and I would stop fast breaking in. So I didn't actually build up the, you know, intentionally build up points, you know.
I never saw what was wrong with that. I know the columnist in the Post, Phil Mushnick, has, I've even done a piece on this, that he tends to rant about how wrong it is to run up points on another team.
Right.
I mean, if you can score, that's the object of the game. There's nothing immoral about it. Do you have a problem with leaving all your best guys in there and trying to
run up? No, I would never do that.
Why?
I didn't do that because it. First of all, if you did start kicking butt, it was an opportunity for the other players to get into the mix with the starting five, and to learn how to play with a team with the, you know, with say three of the starters and two of the subs come in. So you always wanted to mix it up because we actually only had nine guys on the team. So we, you know, you want to mix it up so you get different combinations of people working together. So you always keep it moving and fresh and finding new guys who could play with each other well.
Right.
And so I never felt a desire to really run it up. You know, there were certain teams, you know, I definitely wanted to kick butt because our school would in the past been their ass kicked from these schools. So you enjoy that. But I never, you know, threw it in their face. I wouldn't, you know.
But actually, the question before was whether you ran into any parents that were really nutso.
Well, I had ran into parents who didn't like their particular team getting their ass kicked.
Oh,
so
okay.
They confronted me like you just said, why did you run up the score? And I said, I didn't run up the score. You saw me. I stopped pressing. I didn't fast break to guys. I put in all my substitutions. It's just that we have a bunch of guys who could play.
Cool.
And so, you know, I had to diffuse that, but
Well, we're
get sensitive about it, but
Yeah. We're talking baseball with Robert Klohesky, but we're going to move now into what really is taking up most of your life, which is performing, which is acting on television and in the theater now and on film. Let's go back, as people tend to do in interviews, to the beginning. And in your childhood, was there that point when you said, oh, I think I know what I want to do for a living?
No, it didn't. It happened later on. We grew up in the Bronx, and then we finally moved out of the Bronx when I was a junior, and I went to school junior and senior year in up in Rockland County. And a number of different injuries I had kind of snuffed out my, dream of playing sports in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, in the senior play for a goof, and then
What was the play?
It was called Kismet.
Oh, cool, yeah, a musical.
Yeah.
I was going to ask that question later, if you had ever been, because I would not associate you with singing and dancing and tapping.
Yeah, well, I actually got my first break in a musical.
Which?
It was one I did with Blythe Danner. We did it called Lucky Lucy and the Fortune Man. And it was off Broadway, Lower East Side, and it was a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a small part in a play up at Williamstown Theater Festival with Blythe, and we got to talk, and she liked me a lot, and she asked me to come audition for this workshop, which I did. And
I sung,
you know. It wasn't I can sing, but you know, I don't have a big musical Broadway voice,
right.
But you know, I could carry a tune, and I can, you know,
you move well, as it were,
you know, I could sell it.
Yeah.
And anyway, that workshop got me an audition for Hill Street Blues. Because MTM was producing the workshop. Blythe Danner's husband is Bruce Paltrow, who is the executive producer of St. Elsewhere.
And executive producer of Gwyneth as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Gwyneth was always around then. And I got on Hill Street Blues.
Change your life?
It did. I mean, it got me working. You know, prior to that, I was just doing, you know, off Broadway, and you know, in little dungeons in New York, you know,
right.
Plays, and then that got me onto TV, and then I stayed out in L.A., and I did a bunch of TV shows and guest spots and all that.
And
5 years ago, we moved back east, because basically I didn't want my kids growing up in L.A., and we moved up to Connecticut.
Well, L.A. was dangerous or just boring? Or
For living in L.A.?
Yeah.
You know, it's such a show-busy town, and it's just I wanted the kids to be in the country and the woods and
fresh
back
air,
and not brown trees and smog and talking showbiz.
One thing that is in your bio in the playbill is you mentioned a teacher and director named Walt Whitcover.
Right.
So at some point you must have studied. Who is this fellow?
Walt Whitcover. Well, finally, after community college, I transferred to State University of Purchase.
Mm-hmm.
I studied at Purchase for 4 years, and he was my teacher, Walt. And then he has a theater in New York called the Masterworks Laboratory Theater, where he directs all sorts of things, operas, plays, does one-man shows, he has workshops. And so I studied with him down here. And he directed me in a number of things, and he's always been someone I could go to whenever I have any kind of acting problems, and he's a dear friend and a real lifesaver, someone, you know, mentor who I could...
Looking also at your resume, rather intriguing that at one point you did play in regional theater Streetcar Named Desire. You were at Hartford Stage in that.
Right.
As Stanley. So I guess the question is, what was your take on him, and how was it different from, you know, Brando and Alec Baldwin?
Oh, I didn't play that part.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I just assumed. No, but actually,
Mitch,
when I auditioned for that, when I walked in, they thought, so you're going to audition for Stanley? And I went, no, you know what? I'd rather play Mitch. I think it's a more interesting part. I mean, this is what I told him. I said, you know, I grew up with a bunch of Stanleys. I think it'd be more interesting to play Mitch. And so I auditioned for Mitch, and I played.
Well, how did you do it differently from Carl Malden?
Yeah, well, I really like Carl Malden.
Yeah.
Probably why I wanted to do it. I really like, you know, I love the way he played it and everything. He's great.
And forgive me for making that assumption or that mistake, but do you find yourself, in a certain way, typecast? Because you wind up on Hill Street Blues in Oz. Even the character you play in Rounding Third is sort of a, you know, a Queens kind of mooky sort of dude fella. And do you ever feel like, okay, they're going to cast me as that again and again and again and again?
A big lug kind of blue collar.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you are what you are. You know, it's, you know, I'm a big guy and, you know, so it's hard to, you know, especially on TV, you pretty much get cast close to, what you are. Though I, you know, on TV, I've actually had a lot of, an assortment of different roles where I've played, you know, a really mentally challenged, am I allowed to say retard?
That you can say.
On NYPD Blue, I played a painter on Doogie Howser. You know, so I've done an assortment of things, but for the most part, you know, I get cast as the cop or, you know, the bad guy.
Right.
You know, and if they want to keep doing that and at more frequency, fine with me.
As they say, it's a living, right?
That's right.
Getting back to the particular show you're in, Rounding Third, did the character click immediately for you, or was there a point in the rehearsal process, or maybe previews, where then you said, oh, that's it, I got it? Was there a moment?
Well, I was just, I think it was a gradual thing, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, the through line, his whole reason for why he was so motivated to get these kids to be winners, you know, and so I had to find a backstory on him, and I did my own little backstory in order to justify, you know, his fervent
right.
beliefs in winning at all costs kind of thing, and the desire for that will only help kids in other ways and aspects of their lives that the other character doesn't realize.
Yeah, that is one of the interesting things about both the performance and the character, that, you know, you think you have him pegged within the first 10 minutes, and it's like, oh, he's gonna turn out to be all right, but he's still gonna be like kind of this butthole and brash
right.
and annoying, and then there are moments all the way through where you just go, oh, wow, no, he is so much more than that.
Right.
And that I think is pretty special. The show is in an open run at the John Houseman Theater. I should ask you, as we're wrapping up, do you have other projects in the hopper? There's a Sidney Lumet film, I think.
Well, I did a Sidney Lumet film that should be out. I don't know when it's going to be out, but that's with Glenn Close and Oliver Platt.
Cool.
And
Strip Search, I think is the
Strip Search, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And any other projects, or right now everything is centered on
yeah, we're sort of doing this play. We're trying to see where, you know, how far, you know, they're trying to, you know, pondering moving it to Broadway. But it's all kind of up in the air. And, you know, I kind of like not try to think about it and just do my work and get in there and stick some butt in the play. And then whatever happens, happens.
Well, I have to say it's really good work. I really, one of the reasons I definitely wanted you on this program was just to say, folks, go see Rounding Third. It's quite enjoyable and fun. And Robert Clohessy, my guest, is something to watch in that play. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com.
The more you want to care them, the more you love someone, the more he make you cry. Though you are sly for making peace with them and loving, that's why you love so strong, you like to make him die. The more you love someone, the more he make you crazy. The more you love someone, the more you wishing him dead. Sometimes you look at him and only see fat and lazy, and wanting peace for that, for hitting him on his head.
If you love Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance, isn't it time you subscribe to Performing Arts Insider, the ultimate guide to everything on the stages of New York? Listings, reviews, box office and production news, even Broadway rumors. To subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511, or go to TotalTheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. Am I on? I think I'm on. Yes, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties there.
The more you love someone, the more you want to care them. The more you love someone, the more he make you cry. Though you are fly for making peace with them and loving. That's why you love so strong, you like to make him die. The more you love someone, the more he make you crazy. The more you love someone, the more you
So let's end this up, and I'll stop talking. We'll bring up the music again, and we'll leave that going for the interview with Jeannie Lieberman. Here we go. The More You Love Someone, that from the cast album of Avenue Q, the new Broadway musical at the Golden Theater on West 45th Street, and want to talk about Avenue Q and Little Shop of Horrors and a bunch of other shows, most of them off-Broadway, with my very special guest on the phone with me from Long Island, a little further out than I am at the moment. I'm in Babylon. She's out in the Hamptons somewhere today, but has been very kind to speak with us on all sorts of theater things, because she is a theater critic for TheaterScene.net. Her name is Jeannie Lieberman, and I want to welcome her to Dave's Gone By. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, David.
How you doing? How was your weekend?
My weekend was good, a little chilly, but beautiful, as it is today. You know, I was just thinking about these two Broadway shows that we're going to talk about. If anyone dropped onto Broadway right now and heard us, they would wonder what happened to the Broadway musical. Because both Avenue Q and Little Shop of Horrors are kind of simplistic.
Well, simplistic in the sense, explain that actually, go for it.
Well, I mean, it's not the traditional book musical with highly choreographed, costumed, directed to with general songs, love songs that can be lifted out of context and sung.
Well, actually, we just played. I don't know if you were able to hear.
I heard it. I don't think that's a generic love song.
It's not generic at all. That's what makes it so terrific,
I think. If you love someone, you want to kill them.
Isn't it true? Haven't you ever wanted to take
Maybe
a baseball
true.
Bat to...
But it's not what something that you would have likely heard, you know, in the golden age of Broadway musicals.
Probably. Oh, but you know what? The Broadway age of golden musicals came up with Guys and Dolls and Adelaide singing about a person can give you a cold.
You're
Same
absolutely
thing.
Right. You're right, now that I think of it.
And all I want to say about The More You Love Someone and Avenue Q is the more I listen to the Avenue Q CD, the more I remember what a good time I had in the theater and how much more I even like it now. Than sitting there. It's funny stuff. It's a good
Well, that's what happened
thing.
To me, actually. It sort of whizzed by me when I saw it off-Broadway, because I had seen Xana Don't the night before, which was a very glitzy, high-energy, almost psychedelic musical.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was so relatively simplistic that I thought, I don't know, crude sets, puppets, you know, give me a break. And it seems to be geared for the postgraduate group.
Of which we are both, I believe.
Well, yes, I was. Thank you very much.
No, you're always postgraduate. I mean,
yes, we are. But these are the recent postgraduates who were concerned with finding a job and finding a love mate and, you know, the price of real estate and stuff like that.
I don't know. Two out of three for me there. You know?
Some things never change.
But
then it really did take on racism and homophobism and...
All of it. That was kind of the fun part. It did it within the realm of a Sesame Street type show with actors carrying these puppets, and you really, you know, you are always sort of looking at the actors, but it's joining with the puppets, so there's that split focus, but you buy it all, I think.
Yeah, when I saw it again on Broadway, this time I wasn't reviewing it. I brought somebody, one of my writers, so I could just enjoy it. And you know, it just really was wonderfully pleasurable and very sharp, very sharp.
It has that whole thing about, I guess, the modern musical. It's ambivalence. It's always, everyone's a little bit racist, is one song. Schadenfreude is another, you know. Everybody wishes a little something wrong with someone else.
Yeah.
I don't know, I liked it a lot. So what, if we're talking about puppets, and as you say, simplistic-ish musicals.
Yes.
How does Avenue Q stand up against, and it's not fair to compare them, but the revival of Alan Menken and Howard Ashman's Little Shop of Horrors, also on Broadway at the Virginia Theater?
Well, I would say that Little Shop has no intellectual redeeming or social redeeming value, but I was kind of embarrassed to walk out enjoying it.
Really? I mean, had you seen the original, which I did not?
I think I saw the original. It was 21 years ago. But I did see a summer production of it recently on Fire Island, and, you know, I had to review that, so I had to sort of get back into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most endearing part of it is the score, the Howard Ashman, Alan Menken score, which is so much better than the actual show, and it sort of gets into your head and stays there. Like, suddenly Seymour is another love song.
Yeah, it is. It's another unusual-ish, generic-ish love song. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it,
and be a dentist and all that. And a love song to a drill, I would assume. Did you, in my review of Little Shop, my problem, and it's not fair, but it is going back to the originals. I never saw the stage play, but of course I'm familiar with the Frank Oz film.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Steve Martin, and there's Ellen Green, and there's Rick Moranis in my head, and I'm trying to watch... Instead, you know, Rob Bartlett and Cary Butler and
Hunter Foster.
Hunter Foster.
I thought Hunter was wonderful. I mean, he starred in Urinetown, and he brought all his talent. He was just nerdy enough, not to be too nerdy and dorky, but you know, lovable and endearing. And he has a wonderful voice and stage presence. I thought he carried the show.
That's interesting. Yeah, okay. And Cary Butler as Audrey. Not Audrey the plant, Audrey the...
Yeah,
the Audrey.
Well, you know, it's an easy role to play. It's a ditzy, blonde kind of...
And what did you think of Bartlett? He plays Mr. Mushnick.
I thought he was good.
Me too.
He was good,
yeah.
You know. He had both aspects of the proprietor. He was sort of friendly and paternal, and then turned into a manipulator.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I thought they were all good, and just they were sort of pale to me. It was kind of like...
Well, then you have more vivid memory of it than I do. You know, I just thought, I was just overwhelmed by Audrey, too. I was sitting in the third row, and I really did feel like a child. Because it just grows and grows, and at the end it sort of spills over the proscenium towards the audience.
Yeah, that was a moment. That was a moment worthy of The Lion King, that opening when everything's coming down the aisles and everything's going crazy. When that plant is coming out, everybody's grooving to it. It's very, very cool.
It's very cool, and it's, you know, a chance to laugh, but I wouldn't take young children to it, because basically it's very bloody.
And there's some language also in there that surprises me still.
And I don't remember that, but I know that Doug Sills is that terrible sadistic dentist.
That's right. Every kid, even if they just had a pack of Oreos, would be like, I'm going to go, nope, never again.
We don't want to go to a dentist after him, but he got his just desserts.
He did. Dessert being the operative term, I guess.
The operative
dessert
term.
For All right, we have just, believe it or not, just a little bit of time left already.
No.
I want to talk Off-Broadway. I saw Omnium Gatherum.
Oh, the dinner party from hell. And it is. You know, it was Dinner Party from Hell, but the way it was written and for the audience who witnessed it.
Did it?
It was supposed to be a substantive play and another reaction to 9/11. It gave a little dignity and insight into 9/11. But as written, every character who's supposed to be somebody in real life, Martha Stewart, you know, the author Tom Clancy, Christopher Hitchens, they were just talking heads,
yep,
sound bites.
Mm-hmm. And when I was watching it, I had forgotten all the stuff I read about there being particular characters. Because, you know, the so-called Martha Stewart character in that play did not remind me at all.
No,
of anything like
no.
This.
So it was
awful,
like a waste of energy.
Annoying. Yeah.
All the intelligentsia were trying to identify the people on stage, and that did not work well for
pointless.
The play.
And as a play itself, as you say, I fully agree. I was in it for a little while because it's clever.
Two characters in the play, they tell you, are already dead.
Oh, yeah.
Two-thirds of the way, you know. Give me a break.
And what killed me about that was, okay, if you start to accept that, if you say, oh, wait a minute, okay, so this one's dead and that one's dead. the entire preceding hour and a half, it wouldn't make any sense logically at all. It kills the whole
theory
of what's going on.
That's right. There was no sense to it at all, and there was very little substance. And I really didn't really, and nobody seemed, none of these social icons offered any insight into 9/11. So to me, it was just a waste.
Okay. Just enough time now to do kind of a Siskel-y, Ebert-y kind of a thing on one or two more pieces.
Okay.
Recent tragic events.
Well, there are a lot of ways to trivialize 9/11, and this was the worst.
Okay.
This was worse than Omnium Gatherum. I mean, it had nothing to do with 9/11. Heather Graham was totally wasted in this. And, well, let's put it this way. The author said at the end that the play isn't controversial, and if anybody's offended by it, they have no sense of humor. Well, you count me in.
And I'm
well, count me out.
Who write pre-defenses before anybody's even said it's offensive. It's like they're trying to drum up some kind of interest in the play somehow. Jimmy Lieberman, thank you for drumming up interest with us on Dave's Gone By. Please... remind us again, you write for...
I am the
editor of
theaterscene.net.
Mm-hmm.
So I want everybody to click on.
theatercscene.net.
Theaterscene.net.
And also, thank you for talking with us about the theater here. I'm
always a pleasure.
Inviting you back to talk about more stuff as the season really kicks in. Thanks again so much.
I can't wait.
Bye.
Bye.
If you love Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance, isn't it time you subscribe to Performing Arts Insider, the ultimate guide to everything on the stages of New York? Listings, reviews, box office and production news, even Broadway rumors. To subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511, or go to TotalTheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Time for the news gone by, a look at events of the past week from a cagey and stagey perspective. Sad news on the Staten Island Ferry this week. One of the commuter boats slammed into the St. George Terminal, killing 10 people, injuring 50 others. Apparently it never slowed down on the approach back to the dock, possibly because one of the two captains had fallen asleep after failing to take his blood pressure medication. To make matters worse, he abandoned the ship after the accident, drove home, and tried to commit suicide by cutting his wrists and then shooting himself in the head with a pellet gun. He failed at these attempts, and prosecutors are considering pressing charges. Weird as this guy sounds, it does make me wonder about the other captain. I mean, why bother having two people steering a ship if the other can't do the job while his partner's incapacitated? Anyway, passengers who survived the incident say the crash was complete chaos, with screaming and blood and people losing limbs. The most horrifying part was when the first mate cried out, "All hands on deck!" and the purser replied, "We have all the hands, now we're diving for the legs." Sorry about that. In wacky, wacky, wacky Middle East news, the Arabs really did it this time. Instead of a suicide bomber strolling into a Jerusalem cafe and killing innocent men, women, and children, but, you know, who cares, because they're just Israeli, This time, they sent a remote-controlled car to blow up a diplomatic convoy in Gaza. And what do you know? 3 Americans were killed. That's right, not disposable Jewish folks, not the usual, they kill Jews, Jews kill Arabs, they kill more Jews, Jews kill more Arabs. No. This time they went outside the box and got a box of Yankee Doodles. All the militant groups are denying responsibility. Duh, hey. Yasser Arafat called the attack an awful crime, which I guess is somewhat different from the not-so-awful crimes he's condoned since the Intifada started. And all the folks who think America should be taking a more so-called, even-handed approach in the Arab-Israeli conflict, I wonder what they thought of the crowds of Arab kids running to the scene of the blast, throwing rocks, laughing, and chanting, God is great. Well, I sure hope God is great, because what people do in the name of Allah sucks. Speaking of religion, Mother Teresa was beatified yesterday in a ceremony presided over by Pope John Paul II, the great lady who spent 50 years ministering to the poor and sick in India, can now be raised to the level of a saint at some point. The weird part of yesterday's ritual is that it required actual samples of her hair and blood. Both were taken recently from her exhumed body under ecclesiastical supervision. Still, they did some blood testing, and it turns out Mother Teresa had syphilis and 3 types of herpes. Mr. Teresa blames it all on the flies, but no, just kidding. But nearly 250,000 people watched the religious ceremony, where they all heard Pope John Paul II say, No, but seriously, people worldwide are starting to worry about the pontiff's failing health. He appears terribly frail, he shakes from Parkinson's, he's no longer able to finish all his speeches, and worst of all, now when he plays poker, the cardinals let him win. Well, China joined the space race last week. On Wednesday, Lieutenant Colonel Yang Liwei blasted off in the Shenzhou 5, which orbited the Earth for about 21 hours before returning to the Gobi Desert. Now, remember when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon? One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. It was a great line. Only a lot of know-it-alls said he actually misspoke. He meant to say, one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind, which makes more literal sense than the way it came out. But everybody got the gist, and it still sounded profound, especially when you compare it to the words of Lieutenant Colonel Liwei. How's this for inspiring? And this was before he even went up. Liwei said, quote, I will not disappoint the motherland. I will complete each movement with total concentration, and I will gain honor for the People's Liberation Army and for the Chinese nation. Whoa, now there's a poet, right, huh? But seriously, the Chinese government is taking the launch very seriously, as it makes the country only the 3rd in history to put a man in space. For that reason, the entire mission was cloaked in secrecy. We do know that Liwei is the only human on board, and rumor has it the spacecraft also carried 10 male and female pairs of cats and dogs, confirming the rumor that Beijing is indeed building the first Chinese restaurant in space. On the crime front, now how's this for timing? Last Tuesday, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly was testifying before City Council on the need for extra bank security. That's because this year has seen a sharp spike in bank heists. Anyway, while Kelly was speaking, he was handed a note at that very moment, another bank robbery was in progress. Kelly told the council he needed to go, and added that next week he intended to give a speech about a rash of teenage groupies begging lonely police commissioners for sexual attention. Actually, just a side note, when he was testifying about bank security, Kelly admitted to the panel that not all the thieves and potential thieves were particularly bright. Kelly laughed, and this is true. He laughed and said, quote, one robber wanted to convey that he had the deadly anthrax virus, and he wrote, I have Amtrak. Not surprisingly, that criminal's plans were derailed. In local crime news, a Hampstead man bicycling near his home last Sunday was shot in the buttocks. As he went to get help, the guy saw a 2-door Honda speed away. Police are asking anyone with information to call their hotline So far, the only call the victim has received was from a member of the Mepham High School football team who said, "Hey, I sympathize, but at least the hole in your butt is going to shrink one day." I'm sorry, that was a lame joke, but it is an excuse to play this song.
Reach in your pocket for a handgun. Lever at my booty hole. Put a trigger on me. Shoot me with a gunshot.
Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass.
Put me for a hose in my booty hole. Fill me full of lead in my ass crack. Take my life away from this earth. Blow my ass away from this world.
Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass.
Yes, Joan Baez there. No, Wesley Willis, of course, from the Feel the Power album, Shoot Me in the Ass. But don't shoot me yet, because I have tons more Dave's Gone By items this week on... News Gone By items on Dave's Gone By. And we continue with health news. The FDA is getting ready to reapprove the use of silicone breast implants. This comes a little over 10 years after they were taken off the general market. Spokespersons for the Food and Drug Administration say they're not 100% sure the implants are safe, but it would take more than 10 years of study of a large population sample to measure the long-term health effects of these things, and they're apparently under pressure to get them back on the market now. So, they urge women to be checked once a year and know all the risks. They should also be on the lookout for signs of breakage, leakage, or ossification. There are also audio signs to listen for, such as hearing a gushing noise, a popping sound, or your boyfriend saying, "Ow, I chipped my tooth." Well, another bad week for radio yakmeister Rush Limbaugh. After being dismissed from a TV gig at ESPN for the wrong reason, speaking a politically incorrect opinion, the conservative pundit was then pilloried for the right reason, not answering that doorbell. No, the right reason was because he had a serious addiction to prescription painkillers. Not so much the narcotic use itself. Harmless drug addicts need treatment a lot more than punishment. It's the hypocrisy. Limbaugh was so derisively outspoken about potheads, quote-unquote, and what one assumes he deemed as the wrong kinds of illegal drugs, the drugs you buy on the street rather than through the internet or a corrupt Park Avenue doctor. You don't see DEA SWAT teams swooping into Central America and seizing kilos of Lorset, Hydrocone, and Rush's favorite, OxyContin. Still, old Rush has been forced to admit he's not only the biggest dope on the radio, he's also the biggest dope addict on the radio. But hey, nobody's perfect. Even people who demand everybody else be perfect. And that's why I wrote this song. The pill between Rush Limbaugh's lips is gonna be Oxy. He takes some really groovy trips when he is on Oxy. He started when his back went out. It made him feel just fine. Even better at double the dosage. Best of all at times nine. He used to be so anti-drug until he popped Oxy. But now his brain has turned to mush. He really is a different man on Seconal and Percodan. OxyContin Rush. Oh, Rush, I hope you learned a very valuable lesson. It was a pleasure hearing you contrite and confessin'. You used to be intolerant, and everyone else was wrong. But now we know your bloodstream has more than Tommy Chong. The drug that put you in rehab, the doctors call Oxy. ESPN has made you hush. Once you made left-wingers fear you, now you just say, I can hear you. Hippie hunting, no one's wanting, Oxycontin rush. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and Dave's got guests. Well, a guest, and
hi.
Hello, back on Dave's Gone By here on AM 1240 WGBB and AM 1240 WGBB.com. Sorry, we're just having a few technical difficulties tonight. I need my wonderful engineer here, Trevor, to cue up the CD, track number 2, please. And just lay it in there. No. Okay. We'll just skip that song. Just take that out of there. That's the wrong CD. It's okay. All right, let's continue the news gone by. This will save us a little time later in the show. Well, I was going to play Devil's Radio by Robin Hitchcock, but now the bloom is up because he mentions Rush Limbaugh and all that. Doesn't matter. In sports news, Chicago baseball fans are dismayed and distraught after their team lost the pennant to the Florida Marlins. Chicago actually seemed poised to make the World Series this year, but in Game 6 of the playoffs, just when things were going their way, an overzealous fan named Steve Bartman grabbed a fly ball that could have been caught, and everything went to hell for Chicago after that. Bartman's been going through hell, too. Police had to escort him out of the ballgame from people throwing beer and cursing at him. He's changed his phone number, ducked work a couple of days. Florida Governor Jeb Bush jokingly offered Bartman asylum in Miami if his own hometown gets too rough. On the positive side, Siegfried and Roy star, Roy Horn, sent Bartman a sympathetic note, saying, "Don't sweat it. You think you have trouble with Cubs?" And speaking of Roy, here's an update on his condition. After being mauled by that tiger, he suffered a major stroke. And because the brain can swell after a shock like that and cause deadly cranial pressure, physicians went in and surgically removed about a quarter of his skull. Asked if he approved of the procedure, Roy said, "I trust my doctor, and besides, he wouldn't be the first man I've given a little head to." Yes, 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 you know that sound. That is the sound of the comedy bell, signaling the Dave's Gone By bad pun of the week. Listen to it ring. Listen to it ding. It also has a dong, but we won't talk about that with children listening. Yes, it's the comedy bell, letting you know that I've just made a play on words so egregious, so Kelly without Regis, that we have to call attention to it with this irritating stunt. And best of all, you or your company can sponsor this exciting radio moment. That's right. Not only can you advertise on this show, you can tie your product, event, or service in with this very segment. And instead of my saying, "The Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week," I might say, "The Frabjous Hardware Store Bad Pun of the Week," or "The Greco Colostomy Supply Company Bad Pun of the Week." Or if you have a theatrical or charity event or a cleaning service or roof repair, let the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week be brought to you by you. All it takes is a few dollars a week, nothing to break your bank account, and you can reach hundreds and thousands of listeners all over Long Island, all over New York, and America on the Internet. Don't miss this opportunity to be part of the terrifying magic that is the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week. For information and rates, call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. That's 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Ask for Steve and tell him you want to sponsor the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week. Don't be good. Be ponderful.
As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morn, a poor little baby child is born in the meadow. And his mama cried, People, don't you understand? This child needs a helping hand. He's gonna grow to be an angry young man someday. Why, take a look at you and me. Are we that blind to see? Do we simply turn our heads and look the other way? And the world. And the hungry little boy with the runny nose plays on the streets as the cold wind blows in the ghetto. And his hunger burns. So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight. One night in desperation, a young man breaks away. He buys a gun and steals a car. He tries to run, but he don't get far. And his mama cries. A crowd gathers round an angry young man face down in the streets with a gun in his hand. Oh, people, don't you understand? This child needs a helping hand. He's gonna grow to be an angry young man someday. Hey, take a look at you and me. Are we that blind to see? Do we simply turn our heads and look the other way?
Continuing the news gone by on Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com, a little recreational news. Urban Outfitters has stopped selling a board game on its website that opponents say promotes racial hatred. The game, called Ghettopoly, as in Ghettoopoly, replicates the rules and situations of Monopoly, only moving it to a blighted urban landscape. Instead of a rich money bags landing on Baltic Avenue, you get ghetto characters like players and pimps landing on crack houses. Newsday quotes from an official website describing the game. Quote, if a player owns all the stolen property in the same color pattern, the player can buy crack houses from the loan shark and set them up on the property. If the player has four crack houses on each of the stolen properties, he can buy projects. Of course, he has to do all this without getting shot, carjacked, or addicted. Now, I've seen the mascot on the box of this thing, and he is, as a Washington Post reporter describes, quote, a kerchief-wearing thug who looks like the bastard son of Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben. Pretty funny, though. Oddly enough, Ghettopoly was created by a 28-year-old Taiwanese immigrant who made sure the game included offensive stereotypes of all races, kind of like Major League Baseball. No, but Hasbro immediately told the press its own Monopoly has absolutely no ties with Ghettopoly, and they're threatening legal action, and if that doesn't work, the CEO of Hasbro says he will have no choice but to peel a cap and tear that slant-eyed mofo a 9mm hole in his mojo. Yes, it's enough.
Reaching your pocket for a handgun. Lever it at my booty hole. Put a trigger on me. Shoot me with a gunshot.
Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass.
Put me full of holes in my booty hole. Fill me full of lead in my ass crack. Take my life away from this earth. Blow my ass away from this world.
shoot me in the ass, shoot me in the ass, shoot me in the ass, shoot me in the ass.
Oh, it's a special night, isn't it? Finishing up the news gone by with a couple more stories. I don't know, we're going to think about stories involving food and children that dumbs down the headline writers at Newsday. A couple of weeks ago, they came up with the classic, school's food sickens pupils. And I was like, in 50 years of school cafeterias, when hasn't it? But this week, Newsday returned with another headline, obese kids prone to lure of fast foods. Well, gee, thanks for clarifying that. And next week's headline, blind people more likely to read with fingers. Finally, in the news gone by, Bruce Kulick, a lead guitarist for the rock group Kiss during the 1980s, was wounded last week in Los Angeles. Stray bullets hit Kulick's leg and grazed his head when a man coming out of a nearby nightclub went on a shooting rampage. Kulick was treated at a hospital and released. Police say he had no connection to the gunman, he just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, which is ironic, since that's also true about anyone who attended a 1980s Kiss concert. And that's the news gone by for October 20th, 2003. Please send your comments, opinions, and skull fragments to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. That's the address for all snail mail to the program. Letters, checks, books for dummies, it's all good. Send them to Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. We reserve the right to read your letters on the air, name withheld upon request. If you have a story that you think would be right for the news gone by, something weird, something goofy, or better yet, something I can goof on, please email me, davesgoneby@aol.com, davesgoneby@aol.com. If we use the story on the air, I'll mention your name and make sure everybody knows it's your fault. davesgoneby@aol.com. I look forward to getting your stuff, but please, no fly balls. They're too tiny. And we'll be... What? What? You want me to play Shoot Me in the Ass again? No, I'm just kidding. I couldn't. Well, unless, of course, you all sang along. Back after this.
Reaching your pocket for a handgun, lever at my booty hole, put a trigger on me, shoot me with a gunshot.
Shoot me in the ass, shoot me in the ass, shoot me in the ass, shoot me in the ass.
Put me full of holes in my booty hole, fill me full of lead in my ass crack, take my life away from this earth. Blow my ass away from this world.
Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass. Shoot me in the ass.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Time for a bit of a change of pace. I know we were theatrical before, but now a segment called Dave Gets Poetic, or Poetical, if you will. Basically because a bit of a birthday celebration here. Happy birthday to Jean-Nicolas Arthur Rimbaud, born October 20th, 1854. This is a poet who lived a more dissipated and sexually adventurous life than people born in 1954, or some people born or being born in 2004. Strange life that he had, abandoned by his dad when he was young, and he was forbidden, though, to associate with poverty-stricken folks around him. His mom tried to shelter him and protect him, and she did it so well that he ran away from home and lived willingly in squalor for a while, started writing the poetry, met Paul Verlaine when he was only 17 years old, and they ended up having one of the all-time tumultuous relationships. In fact, during a drunken argument, Verlaine shot Rimbaud in the wrist, and Verlaine did 18 months in prison for that, during which time Rimbaud sort of did his penance, writing something called A Season in Hell. Well, I'm going to read just the opening to that piece, and you'll already get a sense of the kind of writing and flowery stuff and very emotional and sensual and almost subconscious journey that Rimbaud would take in his poetry. This is the opening to A Season in Hell. Once, if my memory serves me well, my life was a banquet where every heart revealed itself, where every wine flowed. One evening I took beauty in my arms, and I thought her bitter, and I insulted her. I steeled myself against justice. I fled. Oh, witches! Oh, misery! Oh, hate! My treasure was left in your care. I have withered within me all human hope. With the silent leap of a sullen beast, I have downed and strangled every joy. I have called for executioners. I want to perish, chewing on their gun butts. I have called for plagues to suffocate in sand and blood. Unhappiness has been my god. I have lain down in the mud and dried myself off in the crime-infested air. I have played the fool to the point of madness, and springtime brought me the frightful laugh of an idiot. Now, recently, when I found myself ready to croak, I thought to seek the key to the banquet of old, where I might find an appetite again. The key is charity. This idea proves I was dreaming. You will stay a hyena, etc., shouts the demon who once crowned me with such pretty poppies. Seek death with all your desires, and all selfishness, and all the seven deadly sins. Ah, I've taken too much of that. Still, dear Satan, don't look so annoyed, I beg you. And while waiting for a few belated cowardices, since you value in a writer all lack of descriptive or didactic flair, I pass you these few foul pages from the diary of a damned soul. Yeesh.
Take the highway to the end of the night, end of the night, end of the night. Take a journey to the bright midnight, end of the night, end of the night. Realms of lives, realms. End of the night. End of the night.
Rambeau's work influenced the Beat Poets and later rock musicians from Eric Anderson to The Doors, which we just heard, Patti Smith to Jim Carroll to Tori Amos, and of course Bob Dylan name-checked Rambeau for his tumultuous relationship with Paul Verlaine in You're Gonna Make Me Lonesome When You Go. But Rambeau's strongest influence was on poetry, his surreal, subconscious, and symbolist writing in the way of Baudelaire and then later influencing Ginsberg and people like that as well. And the rock artists and the poets are all imitating the wild, even decadent, sexual and physical freedom of Rambeau's writing. Here's Patti Smith.
Over the skin of silver stars and the splinters of stations and walls I've caressed, stages like each fold of wood, like a log of Helen. It's my pleasure. I would measure the success of a night by the amount of pits and seed I consumed all over the columns that nestled the PA. Some nights I surprised everybody by skipping off with a skirt of green that filled over with flat metallic circles which dashed and flashed. The night you borrowed me, but they were white. I had an ornamental veil. I couldn't dare to use it. Even when my hair was cropped, I could make covering. But now that my hair itself is a veil and a scalp, inside of the scalp of a crazy and sleepy Comanche, right beneath this matting of skin, I wake up. I am lying peacefully. I'm lying peaceful and my knees are open to the sun. I desire him. He will not be ready to seize me. In heart, I am Muslim. In heart, I am an American. And in heart, I'm a Muslim. In heart, I'm an American artist. And I have no guilt. I seek pleasure. I seek mirth on your skin. The narrow archway, the rare scroll of ancient letters. We worship the floor, the belly, the belly, the mole on the belly of an exquisite whore. You spare the child and spoil the rod. I have not sold myself to God.
Patti Smith from, I think that's the Horses album, or no, it's the Easter album, of course, the one that she was very influenced by Rambeau in the writing and the performing of. And one of the things that Rambeau was, I keep pronouncing it, I know I'm doing that wrong, I make it sound like the Sylvester Stallone character, but it's R-I-M-B-A-U-D, of course, as I'm sure all of you know. And one of the things that he did in exploring this way of taking poetry into an almost physical sensual realm was something called synesthesia, using one sense to describe another, like printing the word blue on a piece of paper using the color blue. And he, I believe, did that with a poem he wrote called Vowels. Certainly he wrote it to make the letters feel like something. This is in a translation by Oliver Bernard. Vowels. A, black. E, white. I, red. U, green. O, blue. Vowels. I shall tell one day of your mysterious origins. A, black velvety jacket of brilliant flies which buzz around cruel smells. Gulfs of shadow. E, whiteness of vapors and of tents, lances of proud glaciers, white kings, shivers of cow parsley. I, purples, spat blood, smile of beautiful lips in anger or in the raptures of penitence. You, waves, divine shudderings of viridian seas, the peace of pastures dotted with animals, the peace of the furrows, which alchemy prints on broad, studious foreheads. Oh, sublime trumpet, full of strange, piercing sounds, silences crossed by worlds and by angels. Oh, the Omega, the violet ray of her eyes. That, of course, was Vowels by Arthur Rambeau, who quit writing, by the way, when he was 20 years old. He ran off to be a trader and a gun runner in Africa. Now, either he got cancer or, more likely, syphilis, considering his proclivities, and they ended up amputating his leg. He died when he was only 37 years old. So poets need to go a little mad sometimes, a little deranged, and Rambeau really took it all the way there and influenced a whole bunch of people, some of the folks I mentioned before, including the great, the one and only Van Morrison. Happy birthday, Arthur Rambeau.
me pictures in the gallery. Showed me novels on the shelf. Put my head across the table. Give me knowledge of myself. Show me visions, show me nightmares. Gave me dreams that never end. Show me light out of the tunnel. When there was darkness all around his head, I was just torn down by the Rambo. And always my message would come.
Extra, extra, get your classic episodes of Dave's Gone By here, show after show of comedy, music, and madness, as only Dave can do it. Complete episodes going back to the very first one, only $12 for each audio cassette, just $10 a piece if you buy two or more. Relive such great moments as the Giving Chimp and the Dreidel Game, and such musical magic as Making Poopies and A Dingo Ate My Baby. Classic episodes of Dave's Gone By, only $12 makes a bizarre but thoughtful holiday gift. For a detailed list of archive shows, check the Dave's Gone By website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. That's hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Extra, extra, classic Dave, hear all about it. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. That was the band October Project, a song called Long After Tomorrow. And only 6 days after tomorrow, next Monday, October 27th, October Project is going to be live in the studio on this program. Julie Flanders, Emil Adler, Marina Balika, three folks who've made some of the most gorgeous pop music of the past decade, are back making music again, and they're here next week. So don't miss Dave's Gone By, closing out the month of October with October Project, next Monday, October 27th, 6:30 p.m., Now, before I leave this week, I just have to thank a bunch of cool people. I want to thank you, Engineer Trevor. I know I've got a pretty difficult show to coordinate and put together, but thanks for stepping in there for Vacation Engineer Joe Salzone. Living it up in the Hamptons, naughty little boy, but due back next week. I look forward to his return. Thanks also to Engineer Dennis. Dig his show, Off the Top Hip Hop, all late night long, Saturdays into Sundays, midnight to 6 a.m., A big thank you to our sponsor, the Tandoor Grill. Savory Northern Indian food with a diverse menu of breads, appetizers, and entrees in a plush and relaxed setting. The Tandoor Grill, 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center. Check out their menu at tandoorgrill.com. And it's not Tandoori Grill, it's Tandoor Grill. Leave off the last I for India-licious. And thank you to my special guests, Jeannie Lieberman. Read all her theater reviews at theaterscene.net. So much fun talking to her. We didn't actually get to talk about Living Out, which I quite wanted to. I just saw that show last night, and quite a lot to talk about it. Worth seeing over at the Second Stage, but good talking to her about Avenue Q and about Little Shop of Horrors and Omnium Gatherum, all that stuff. Let's do it again very soon. Big thank you also to my guest, actor Robert Clohessy. Go see him in Rounding Third off-Broadway at the John Houseman Theater. That's on 42nd Street, all the way down on the semi-rebuilt Theater Row. Houseman Theater is, I think, between 9th and 10th Avenue. Check it out. It's a very enjoyable show. Really good performance. Thank you to the Jeffrey Richards Press Office for their help this week. As always, deep gratitude to my wife, Joyce. I couldn't do this show without her emotional support and loving reassurance. And thank you all for listening. There'd be no point in doing this show if you weren't there thinking and laughing, shaking your head in disgust, or nodding in vigorous agreement. It's all good, and I hope you had a great time. So write to me at davesgoneby@aol.com. Be with me next week as we end October with October Project. Monday night, October 27th, 6:30 p.m. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night, good music, and gone by.
WGBB Freeport.